This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
Once again, a good night of Shabbos to everybody. Good to be here together with you and to spend some time to look at the Parsha, to look at the Torah reading, to look at the insights of what Torah has to tell us about, in fact, this incredibly important time of the year. Yesterday, we commemorated the fast of the 17th of Tammuz, the beginning of what is known as the 3 weeks. 3 weeks of semi-mourning, 3 weeks of remembering destruction of Jerusalem, destruction of the Holy Temple, and the exile of the people. It's called the time between the dire straits. It begins with the 17th of Tammuz. It ends with Tisha B'Av. It's a time to think about what we had and what we lost, please God, in the very near future. What we lost, of course, not once but twice, the Holy Temple, the temple that was built by Solomon, and the second temple by the Romans. And in order to start this day, yesterday we fasted, because fasting is, and we try to consider the other important dimensions of life, that in fact which is taking place to all of us as a people, and what has happened to us, and why it's important for us to remember. And with fasting, we say certain prayers, tichot, appeal to God that he consider. Reflecting on the past is not an easy thing, because it comes very often with painful memories as well. Memory is a vital dimension of human existence. It's the road back into who we are, where we come from, what our origins are all about. But in that journey going back, there are all sorts of episodes that we have to relive, that we have to consider and understand how it affects our lives today, here and now. Why do we remember the destruction of the temple? Why is it so important? It happened in the past, it's over, it's gone. We went into exile and here we are. And the answer, of course, is based upon what our sages tell us, that he who mourns properly for the destruction of the temple will merit to see it being rebuilt. When we remember what the temple was really all about, the Beit HaMikdash, it wasn't only a majestic edifice in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount, but all sorts of holy activity took place. The revealed presence of God enabled us to understand ourselves and life and all the experiences of life in an altogether different sort of way. The Beit HaMikdash was the center of the world, the center of creation. In fact, our sages tell us our prayers miraculously travel. And this is the conduit for our prayers to go upward. And the response of God to our prayers, it comes downward through that place as well. It still happened, even though we don't have the temple. The temple is in ruin. But nonetheless, can you imagine, in the time that the Holy... A series of studies of Rambam and the Mishnayos Midot to know the structure of the temple, to know the activities that took place in the temple, to know, in fact, what the temple was all about. And as we learn it, something very miraculous and spiritual takes place. When we say words of Torah, the words actually create a reality. It's not only words that describe a situation or describe a time, or describe whatever it is that we are learning. But the very words of Torah contain within it such a degree of powerful holy energy that it actually creates that reality. And when we study the Talmud, the house of true freedom, then in fact, it creates the reality of the temple coming back into a situation of presence on a spiritual level, and hopefully it manifests on a physical level as well. And this is what we have to remember at all times. We have to remember that it is our efforts that brings about a reality that is greater than the reality that we perceive. It is our words. You know, there is an interesting Hasidic saying. It says, Tracht gut wird sein gut. If you think good, it will be good. And more so, in a sense, the words of Torah, because words are, speech is more of a revelation than thought. It brings into physical presence that which we are studying. And this is why this is a time that we should be involved in picturing the Beit HaMikdash, seeing the vessels, seeing the structure, reading about what in fact took place over there. This is something which is so important to bring about the reality of the Beit HaMikdash becoming the home of holiness in this world once again. And it goes beyond that as well. It tells us that in order to do that, not only did we study, but there is a potential within these 3 weeks of change. There is a potential that the 3 weeks can in fact become the exact opposite of what they are right now. Now they are 3 weeks of sadness and mourning. But through our efforts, we can transform Yehovchu, as a Yom Mo'elu, our sages tell us. We can transform these days into days of extreme joy, of extreme activity, of holiness. We can take that which is dark and turn it into light. We can take that which is painful and turn it into joy. We can take that which is loss and bring about the presence of the Beit HaMikdash. This is why the 3 weeks are so important. It begins, yes, with a fast day, and it ends with a fast day as well. And in between, all sorts of restrictions. But at the same time, you remember, the potential of transformation is powerful and great. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
Well, we've been talking about the 3 weeks. We've been talking about a time that we have to use our memories to recall the destruction of the holy temples twice, once by the Romans, once by the Babylonians, and the exile of the people. Exile is a situation of extreme darkness. Exile is a situation where we perceive darkness to be light, where we perceive evil to be good. Exile is a time that we don't see things as they should be seen. And this is why we end up in a chaotic situation where we ourselves implement situations of negativity. We ourselves implement situations of destruction, thinking that they are good. We often wonder, why is the world in the mess that it's in? Why is the world in a situation of such catastrophic difficulty? And the answer is because this is what humans are doing. They are allowing negative concepts, ideas, and values to become the reality. And this is something which is tragic, but interestingly, it can be changed. It's like the person who was screaming, I can't see, I can't see. And he was told, open your eyes and you'll see. And suddenly the world changed. Suddenly the world changed for him. He was able to see the world clearly. And this is what we have to do during the 3 weeks. This is what the memory process is all about. And this is why the Parsha of the week is the Parsha of Pinchas. Pinchas, the great, great hero. What happened? We read about it at the end of last week's Parsha. Pinchas sees that the head of the tribe, he was leading his tribe in a way of goodness and morality, allowed himself to behave in a way which is completely destructive. You know, last week, we read about the curses of Bilaam. Those curses turned into blessings. And he turns to Balak, who hired him to curse the Jewish people, and he says to Balak, Balak, you cannot win against this people. They are protected by God. They have a shield around them. Not only a shield that protects them, but a shield, when touched by a curse, miraculously turns into a blessing. You cannot destroy them by attacking them. And he says to Balak, the king of Moab and Midian at the time, he says, open your gates, welcome them into your homes, into your culture, into your reality. Let them assimilate, let them intermarry, let them become part and parcel of your culture, your idolatrous culture. Balak listens to this. This is precisely what he does. And instead of fighting with the Jewish people, what he does is he opens the gates to his cities and his homes and says, come, enter, enjoy the life that we live. Pinchas, one person, sees this. He sees Zimri behave in the way that he did. And he comes running to Moshe, and he says to Moshe, Moshe, something has to be done. Isn't it written somewhere in the law that if you see something, a zealot sees something which is contrary to the will of God, he's able to act on it without the court of law? And in this instance, what the head of the tribe of Shimon was doing was contrary to Jewish law and was punishable by capital punishment. Shouldn't he be killed? So Moshe says to him with a strange saying, he who reads the letter, let him implement what he has read. In other words, Pinchas, if you feel strongly about all of this, then do something about it yourself. Now, when you think of the word zealot, what comes to mind is a on consequences of his behavior, because he's driven by this passion, and he fools himself into thinking that whatever he does is good. And it can be acts of violence, and he justifies it by saying, no, this is a good thing, this is a necessary thing. So when we think of zealots generally, we think about irresponsible fanatics that do dangerous and terrible things. And yet in this instance, our sages tell us, of course, that Pinchas was a Tanai, he was a zealot. And what happens? God gives him the gift of peace. Hineni noten lo et briti shalom. I'm giving him my covenant of peace. And he does the most miraculous thing to Pinchas. Gives Pinchas the status of becoming a Kohen, a priest. Now we know that the priests were appointed by God. There were five of them, Aaron and his four sons. What was that all about? If zealousness is looked upon as fanaticism and something which is wrong, why was he given such powerful and strong, overwhelmingly strong and dangerous? And there are those who are correct and holy to do the proper thing. Let's take a look at what actually happened over here. Did Pinchas just act on his own? No. The first thing he did is come to Moshe and say to Moshe, something has to be done. He comes to Moshe, the leader of the Jewish people, the ultimate authority among the people, and he asks what he should do. He's not hot-headed. He just doesn't go off and do whatever it is. He consults with the ultimate authority of holiness at the time. And the second thing, equally important, very often a person who is zealous does so for personal gain. He'll become powerful. He'll become rich. He'll be noticed. He fulfills this inner desire to behave in this bizarre way. And then there are zealots who have no personal motive whatsoever, no personal gain whatsoever. Pinchas gained nothing over here. In actual fact, he put himself at risk. The tribe of Shimon wanted to kill him because he killed their leader. And not only that, but the sages say that this law, that a zealot can behave in this sort of way in rare instances, is a law that's locked away. We don't rule that way. And therefore, he put himself at risk physically and spiritually. It's only through the action of God, where God says, he is the one who avenged me. He is the one who caused this terrible plague to end. He is the one who sanctified my name, and I'm going to give him the covenant of peace. I'm going to make him a Kohen. It's only through this incredible direct intervention from God that the true intentions of Pinchas were recognized, and he was elevated to that position. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened? And this is why, when we take a look at zealousness is something, yes, can be dangerous, but it's also something which can be positive. You must look for guidance. You must look for a situation that you have no personal motive in, not for gain, not for pleasure, not for power, but you do something that might be considered an act of zealousness. Now, we're not called upon to do what Pinchas did, but what learned from Pinchas, the important lesson that we learn from Pinchas. And any time we do that on any level whatsoever, it's considered a positive act of zealousness. We have to have the courage of change. And others might laugh at me, others might scoff, others might say, well, what's this guy doing? And the answer is, if you know that this is the will of God, and you have checked with one who is wiser and greater in the ways of Torah, then this is what you must do. You know, very often, people are quite comfortable where they are. And they live this comfortable life. And at the end of life, they have to ask themselves, what have I actually done with my life? I've lived 70, 80, 90, 100 years. What have I done? What have I really accomplished? Most people, unfortunately, accomplish very little. And this is why you have to challenge the norm. and to say things can be greater and better if I want, and not only for myself, but your example influences so many others. Your example is so powerful that it's able to change the minds and hearts of others as well. We have to change this world, each and every one of us. We have a duty. We cannot sit back and simply live our quiet, very often pathetic lives. We have to have the strength and courage to demonstrate that we possess powerful energy that can and will change the world. And we influence others in a positive way. We take a stand. Not necessarily in their face. We should do it in a gentle way. We should do it in a way that people will find acceptable, not offensive. But at the same time, this is what we have to do. Imagine sitting around a group of your social circle and you tell them you're going kosher or you're keeping Shabbos or doing any other of the mitzvahs that apply today. What's bothering you? But if you do it with sincerity and you do it with honesty and you do it with a sense of purpose and mission, eventually they will see the benefit. They will understand that what you are doing is not some sort of, well, reckless act. This incredible change that brings about a sense of purpose, a sense of calm, a sense of holiness, and they will be influenced. And this is part of our job. Our job is to constantly challenge ourselves with courage and to use that same courage to become an example in a positive way to others as well. This is the Pinchas reality, the zealousness that we have to have. Yes, we have to have a degree of passion. We have to have a degree of acting in a way which demonstrates strength, not ordinary. We have to be extraordinary. And yes, how he put himself at risk. And yes, it's only through the intervention of God. And we act on it with courage and with strength. It brings power to ourselves, power that enables us to influence the lives of others, in family, friends, social circle, whatever the case may be. Our sages tell us that Pinchas and Elijah the prophet had the same soul. Who is Elijah? Elijah is the prophet that's going to herald the coming of Mashiach. Just before Mashiach comes, Elijah the prophet will arrive and shout out to all of creation, to all of humankind, to the Jewish people, Mashiach is imminent. He's here any moment. What's that all about? You know, Mashiach is not only some fantasy. It's a reality that will change the negativity of the world. It will change the darkness into light. It will change the grief into joy. It will change the sadness into light. It is a time of tremendous, tremendous transformation. That's what Mashiach is, physically, spiritually, on every single level. It will be an altogether different type of world. And who recognizes that? Elijah. Elijah the prophet senses the moment when that change is about to take place, senses the moment when all of that is going to happen. And this is why he calls out to the world, Mashiach is imminent. We see that by Pinchas as well. They shared the same soul. Pinchas is Elijah. Elijah is Pinchas. Pinchas, through his action, brought light into a situation of darkness. The Jewish people were behaving so immorally. They were behaving incredibly, incredibly in defiance of God's law. Idolaters they became. Peor, the ultimate idol, became their culture. And what did he do? He changed all of that. He changed chaos into order, into holy order. He brought about the end of a plague, physically and spiritually. What he did was incredibly, incredibly powerful. Just as Elijah reminds us of the coming of Mashiach, Pinchas does the same thing. And this is what we do. Every time we act with courage, with a degree of zealousness in a positive way, we herald the coming of Mashiach. The idea of Mashiach becomes a reality in the lives of, well, ourselves and others as well. And this is what we strive for. What I mentioned earlier on, the memory that tells of what we've lost and what we want returned. And this is why, in the middle of the parasha, we come across the incredible story of the daughters of Tzelophehad. Tzelophehad was a pious man, and his daughter said he had no sons. And because the inheritance laws were such that only male offspring could inherit, they said, our father's legacy, our father's name will be forgotten. We can't inherit. It was a time that they were talking about dividing the land and apportioning the land to each tribe, and within each tribe, to each individual who had come up. Why can't we inherit? Why should our father's name be forgotten? And Moses doesn't turn them away by saying, well, that's the law, it's just that's the reality. He says, let me consult with God. God says, the daughters of Tzelophehad are correct in their demands. And the laws of inheritance were changed. They challenged the spiritual norm and added a new dimension to Torah law. Challenge, courage. They had the courage to stand up and ask for what was necessary, ask for what is important. They had the courage to ask Hashem to change the law within Torah. And this is something that we always have to remember with strength and with purpose. Not only should we take the situation, we have the courage to ask God to change the reality in material things, in spiritual things, in every aspect of life. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We were just talking about the Pinchas mentality. The Haftorah, which is connected to this Parsha, which is read some years, is the famous story of Elijah. And as we mentioned, Elijah and Pinchas had the same soul. The famous story of Elijah, who stood up against the masses' power, and the famous false prophets in the miracle at Carmel, where he challenged them, who is the authentic prophet who can call upon God? And they were embarrassed, and he brought about the incredible miracle of a light fire coming down from heaven, accepting his offering, despite the fact that he had poured water on it to show that it was no trick, God forbid. And Elijah and Pinchas. But this year, we're not reading the Haftarah. This year, because of the structure of the 3 weeks, we'll read the story of Jeremiah, the first of the Haftarah of the 3 weeks. Every Shabbos of the 3 weeks, we read another Haftarah that deals in between the dire straits, the 17th of Tammuz, the rest of the 17th of Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, the fast of Tisha B'Av, 3 weeks of semi-mourning. Now, in that Haftarah, there are a number of things that we look at, and it gives us insight into who Jeremiah was, the time that he lived in, what was happening, and what could be done. Jeremiah lived in a very difficult time. It was just prior to the destruction of the temple. And God comes to Jeremiah and tells him that he is to be the divine voice, the godly voice, to tell the people to change their ways. Otherwise, there will be a destruction and there will be an exile. And he says to Jeremiah, don't become humble. Don't say, I'm young, I'm weak, who am I to speak? You have the strength. From before you were born, you were already endowed with this incredible gift of prophecy. And therefore, you have become the physical mouthpiece in this world to deliver the word of God, to tell the people to change, to tell the people that, unfortunately, terrible things would happen. And we know what happened. We know what happened during the life of Jeremiah. The temple was destroyed. The people were sent in exile. It was a tragic and sad, sad time. This is why we read Jeremiah at this particular time of the year. But he also tells the people that you have the power of change. Repent, and God will bring out a miraculous delivery of the Jewish people. He won't allow destruction to take place. He won't allow the exile of the people. This is what's happening at that particular moment. It's happening at this moment as well. We have the choice. And God says, what do you see in front of you? And Jeremiah says, I see a branch of an almond tree. And suddenly it blossoms. And the word almond, shkedim, it also comes from the root word doing something in a hurry. It's that particular fruit, that particular nut that grows within 21 days. And God says to Jeremiah, just as this fruit grows so quickly, I will quickly change my decree from something which is negative into something which is positive. And this is what we have to realize, that time is not necessarily an obstacle to instant change. Within moments, within incredible moments. And interestingly enough, this is why the Parsha of of the Haftarah of Jeremiah contains the most beautiful, HaBen Yakir Li Ephraim. How sweet is this child, Ephraim, to me? How sweet is this child who trusted me, who followed me into the desert? It's one of the prayers we say over the high holidays. It's a passage that comes from Jeremiah. This is something which we have to remember. God says that we are his precious child, his sweet child. The child showed tremendous faith at the beginning by walking into the desert. The child that showed tremendous, tremendous faith in God and trust in God, that whatever would happen, he would follow God. This is the way Jeremiah speaks to the people. Yes, he has to share with them the harsh reality of, God forbid, what would happen. And tragically, it did happen. But at the same time, he uses a language to awaken the soul of the individual Jews, of all the people. He talks to them in a way that brings out the beauty and strength of who we truly are. He wakes us up, not by shaking us necessarily, but by gently talking to us in a language which is loving and kind. And toward the end of the Haftarah comes the incredible, incredible, incredible statement where God says the following. He says, "This people are holy unto me. And as with all things holy, I will protect them. And anyone who dares attack that which is holy, says God, their end will be destruction. Evil will befall them." Now, Jeremiah is talking to the Jewish people about an external force, the Babylonians, who are at the gates of the city, and the destruction is imminent. And what else does he say? Anyone who touches the Jews, they will be punished. In other words, don't think that this is just a horde of madmen coming to hurt the people. They come with my permission, tragically, and they come because I have sent them. As they came, they know full well that they took advantage of this moment and behaved in a way which was far worse than they should have behaved. And they will be punished because they have tampered with my holy people. What a message for the present time. What a message for the present time. Are we perfect? Far from it. We live in a world very similar to the world that Jeremiah lived in. He wasn't popular. Jeremiah got up and prophesied and spoke that people applaud and clap and shout and scream. No, they despised him. The king despised him. The people despised him. He was fighting against a culture within his own people that was nearly impossible to overcome, and yet he did what he did, and he said what he said. And he had the courage of his convictions. He had the courage of delivering the words as God told him to deliver, but at the same time, he also speaks about a future. He says, this reality won't last forever. And even though, God forbid, there will be a destruction, there's something beyond that. And that's the rebuilding. And that's the time of the 3 weeks. We read this of Torah. We read the story of Pinchas. We read the story of Elijah. We read all these stories, the daughters of Tzelophod, to talk about courage. So when you're in shul tomorrow, as I always say, listen carefully to the parsha. It contains some very interesting elements. The daughters of Tzelophod, the story of Pinchas, the division of the land, the festivals, etc., etc., etc. Listen to the words of the Haftarah. Magnificent. A little troubling at times, but magnificent nonetheless. And there will be something that resonates, something that you will hear that speaks to you and to you directly. And when it does, listen carefully, because it can and will make a change in your life, and you will change others as well. This is the great opportunity of the 3 weeks. The great opportunity is knowing full well that we are in exile, but we can change that reality to one of incredible blessing, the Shabbos.